2%.
The 2%'s right over here.
Oh, hey, Jenna. I didn't know you shopped here.
Yeah. Anything to support local food. Know what I mean?
I definitely do. Though that's not the only thing you do in the name of Good Eats, obviously.
Well, true. I also host Eating Matters every Wednesday at 5 p.m., where we talk about food policy and how it impacts all of us. Be sure to tune in.
All right, gotta get the plug in there. I get it.
Yep, I'm hashtag shameless.
You know what else you can do to support the local food community, right?
Well, yeah. Make a donation to Heritage Radio Network, the world's pioneer food radio station.
That's right. And I gotta call you out on the whole local thing.
What do you mean?
Well, The Farm Report, A Taste of the Past, Japan Eats. Those are shows that take you around the country and the world.
I'll give you that. So how can listeners give their support?
It's pretty easy. Just go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the big red heart in the top right corner. It's pretty easy from there.
Thanks.
Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Cynthia Cherish, Malloran Reverend DJ Cherish the Love, and you are listening to Primary Food on Heritage Radio Network. Before I forget, let me tell you how to reach out to me and get my attention on social media, Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at DJ Cherish the Love, and that is spelled L-U-V, and hashtag using Primary Food. Heritage_radio and hashtag RevLove. So welcome to Primary Food. And what exactly is primary food? I learned this really great concept in nutrition school at IIN, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, that the food you eat, you know, the stuff we put in our mouths and chew and enjoy, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, we consider that secondary food. Primary food is everything else in life that nourishes us before we sit down and eat. And that's stuff like enjoying music, reading a book, hanging out with friends, cooking food, a great job, creative expression, playing games, exercise. And I'm so glad I learned this concept because it was the high-quality primary food that I kept in my life while going through chemotherapy last year that kept me happy and healing my cancer. So if you're listening live right now, you can call in and speak to me and my guest. And the number is 718-497-2128. And again, because I'm sure you did not have a pen or a pencil in your hand. 718-497-2128. So today's primary food focus is, let me cue some music here. So soothing. I feel so whole and complete and peaceful. Typically, I talk about creativity as an expression for primary food. And today, we have a really cool guest. So we're going to be talking a lot, a whole lot, about whole stuff and being whole. Annalisa Vicencio, music therapist, board certified, holistic health coach, also a classmate of mine from IIN.
Hey.
Recovery and eating psychology coach. And yeah, we're going to discuss whole foods and healing. What does it mean to be whole? How do we become whole? Wow, this music. How does music and creativity play a role in our holistic health? What is a whole food? What isn't? And why? You know, like fake fruits, fake foods. We're going to get real with you in this episode because there's some basics that people don't know about whole foods, right, Annalisa?
That's correct.
So tell us your story.
Well, you know, once upon a time, my mom gave birth to me. Hi, everyone. I'm so honored to be here. So let's see. Gosh, where do I start? My darkest days include being at least 100 pounds heavier than I am now, and with full-blown type 2 diabetes, and just not embracing the gifts and really knowing what I was put on this earth for and what my calling was. And to me, you know, Mark David, who's one of my teachers at the Institute for Psychology of Eating, he mentions that the way we do food is the way we do life. And It was so true. I would just soothe myself to sleep with gallons and gallons of ice cream, processed sugar, all this crazy dyes, and not be really present, basically. I was in that much pain. So that's where I was in a nutshell. I'm sure more will come out. And it inspired me to actually become a health coach. But before I get to that, that's actually how I met you.
That is.
So Cynthia did a webinar through IIN. I studied neuroscience. I was very passionate about science. I was a mathlete when I was younger.
Did you say mathlete?
Yes, I was a mathlete.
I've never heard that word before, my God.
But I, you know, basically I was on like tons and tons of medications, blood pressure, this XYZ, you know, it's no joke today, the diabetes epidemic, and, you know, struggled from major depression. I literally was on at least 8 psychotropic or medications for diabetes. I mean, you name it. I was
During
on
what
it.
Ages?
I was probably, you know, 20s, my mid-20s, but I had been on medication since I was in my teens. And until I was like, you know, honestly, I've had enough. I'm sick of this. I totally saw through it. I wasn't obese enough to qualify that for my insurance to cover me for quote-unquote weight loss programs. But I was suffering from every single side effect of those medications. And I saw, you know, to kind of chemicalize my issues was to not really honor the mind, body, spirit thing that was going on. Like just to give me a pill was not going to solve anything. One pill led to another pill to deal with the side effects of that pill. And I became very, very sick. I actually needed to go on disability for a while. And I don't wish that upon anyone living small, living on a fixed income and food stamps, you name it. And the only way I felt like I could deal with life was to just buy processed foods.
And processed foods being?
Ice cream, cookies, baked goods.
Fast food.
When it was fast food, my goodness, it was just like 20 pounds in a month or something. I mean, and like addictive. I would literally get detox symptoms when I wouldn't have it, and I would think it was just more and more and more.
Well, describe that detox symptoms from not having your fix of Burger King or something.
Yeah, or sugar or things with white flour. Like just get, you know, more in the. I would be irritable, discontented, frustrated with life, even sweaty, and just because, you know, since with the insulin resistance, I also have PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, which in a nutshell is a hormonal imbalance. At the root is insulin resistance. So my body, my cells were not responding to insulin, the key that allows sugar to come in. And I was basically being starved. So the sugar was staying in my bloodstream and not getting into the cells where
it was used. So you were being starved while you were eating a lot.
Yes. And it was like I needed more and more. So I had a craving, which was totally normal. Our bodies are wired to survive. But my body didn't know how to use that nourishment, that secondary food, well enough. And I just needed more and more and more. And the food companies know what they're doing. They know that these specific chemicals or refined sugars, I mean, so many peer-reviewed studies, they light up the same dopaminergic, parts of our brain, the neural circuits implicated in addiction or at least dependence, the limbic system. And it was totally like I would shake. I was like, I needed my fix. I went out in snowstorms at 3 a.m. in the morning for my fix.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah. And it was just my life was controlled by food and I just wasn't living up to my potential. I felt useless. I couldn't find a job in the neurosciences where I'd studied. It was very frustrating.
What was your kind of turning point or your realization? Because I remember mine. I as well was about 100 pounds heavier. And I remember coming across just the most incredible fatigue.
Yeah.
Just fatigue. And I remember I was sitting in my office and I was going, wow, I feel so horrible. What could it be? And I was holding like a 24-ounce soda.
Mm-hmm.
And something in me said, it's this thing in my hand.
There were a couple of aha moments. And I think it's also in terms of acceptance, to help turn it around, it was like more of a gradual daily thing. So the aha moments, well, I will say in my teens, I struggled with bulimia. Like desperately, I it was almost another way of controlling my body to, you know, to think I would get the, I thought if I was thin enough, I would be happy, which was a lie. Mm-hmm. And I've been under 100 pounds, also lost my period at that point. Don't even remember it. Cause I was just so, I wasn't even playing music. I was just in my corner, not mm-hmm. sharing my gifts with the world. So I remember one day when I was exercising compulsively and I literally fainted. Because my blood sugar was so low. And uh-huh. I realized at that point, you know, if I don't address this, and not just, you know, one way, I knew it had to, I said I needed like something like God or something. I needed to just like do something. I was going to die from it. Uh-huh. Or who knows, 10 years later, maybe I'd have esophageal cancer with mm-hmm. the purging, all of that stuff. I knew then, and I knew it in my heart. Another time, there's so much stigma against mental illness in society, dealing with major depression, which was totally influenced by what I was eating. Mm. Food is definitely medicine. Food is definitely
talk about that.
Mood altering.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like to the psychiatrist, how is this pill? What is the mechanism of action here? And he described, in a very rough way, neurotransmitter hypothesis that, the basic cells in the brain, there's a synaptic cleft, and the way to, transmit the message is through these chemicals called neurotransmitters. And the point is that for the first time, I realized that there was a biological underpinning, even though that's not the only, aspect of mental illness or mood for that matter, which all of us have. And it wasn't my fault. Right. Mm. And I think there's this myth out there that if you eat less and exercise more, all of which I did, you'll be a good human being or something, and I'll get to the size and then I'll be happy, which is, it really just fuels the exercise and health industry because it's, weight and its loss is not as simple or even addressing mental health and mood is not just, only chemicals. We're so much more than that. We are, I feel, connection with everyone on the spiritual plane. I know it may sound esoteric, but I realize that that this isn't my fault, that millions of people have the same struggle, and that, I wouldn't be calling someone with cancer weak because they had to take, or they would undergo chemotherapy. And actually, I think people are quite strong for trying to, recommit to life and treat whatever their, illnesses are. So that was one aha moment. And then the other one was, I remember I was at a Society for Neuroscience conference and about to present, and I just couldn't walk because my thighs chafed so much. And I was like, today, I don't care what size I am, the fact that I can walk from point A to B, I'm so grateful for that. I can be of service. I can get from A to B,
That's huge.
Yeah.
If you're unable to do things that your heart wants to do.
Yeah.
It's like your soul is dying. It's a terrible feeling.
And at the piano, even my technique, like my posture, because of I was carrying so much around my midsection, all of the undigested life burdens, all of my anger, resentment would, all the cortisol fat would just store there, and it would impede me in like singing and playing and all of that. My creativity.
Never thought about that. Your physical structure.
Yeah.
Affecting how you perform.
Yeah.
Creativity.
And just my own instrument and like taking charge of my voice literally and figuratively. So I was just so restricted and just didn't want to be in that place anymore. And the irony is that, like I said, I had this toxic belief. If I was only, 105 pounds, whatever that number was, or if I had a 4.9 GPA, something impossible, right? That I'd be happy. And, when I really started to treat myself well, in terms of being of service to others, like I knew I had a gift to give society. I wasn't stupid or dumb or giftless. There was something, someone could benefit from me participating in the world again. I remember reconnecting with old friends and I was 190 pounds, still technically obese and happy because I was, you know, and it only, you know, I would just do a sun salutation and just movement like that, not exercise, not doing boot camp that would kill me. It felt so good. And that was the beginning of my journey. And I knew of IIN at that point, and I knew I wanted to become a health coach. At that point, I hadn't graduated college yet. So I was like, I want to get my degree first. And then I went through a quarter life crisis, right?
Quarter life crisis, right?
I was like, I don't know what to do. I guess it's like they call it my Saturn's return. I wasn't finding sustainable employment. And I wasn't meant to only be behind a lab bench as a neuroscience major, even though I loved it passionately. And so I did a group coaching thing, and it led me to see your webinar on IIN. And then I was like, wait a minute, I'm totally sold. But this woman is like me just 10 years later, and she has my story, and she's Filipino. Oh my goodness.
Was so amazing that you reached out.
Yeah.
It just says it said everything about where you wanted to be.
Yeah.
And where you are, and where we're hanging out now doing this is like, it's so beautiful to me. Like that's primary food right there.
Cynthia is a huge part of my primary food, my relationships. And the journey started there. So, and I really believe, you know, so I'm a board certified music therapist now, and I'll tell you how I got there as well. And I'm also a holistic health coach that, you know, it was part of my training, you know, in order to be on that other side, there's something about going through it yourself. And that's part of one of my theories and philosophies as a therapist, that I also must be in my own personal therapy as well as supervision, because so many of that those dynamics to me just strengthen my ability to be present for the client. And once it's like a reciprocal,
that means so much.
Yeah.
So, how can a therapist help someone if they're not whole themselves?
Yeah.
It makes it a difficult situation. What was it that, well, let's talk about whole and how you feel now, and how you eat, and whole foods versus what you were eating and what I was eating 10, 15 years ago. I get it.
Oh my gosh. Today I never thought I'd be, first of all, oh gosh, where do I start? I eat to nourish my body, and the experience is a loving experience. And actually, I mean, I would say 99% of my food is made at home, whereas it was 0%. Yeah. I'm talking like that. 8 years ago when I'm talking about like 8-10 years ago, my darkest days. But and it's just an act of love, just self-love. And that, you know, I mean, it may sound really silly, but every time I make my chia pudding, it's kind of like, you know, I'm nourishing myself, but there's that ripple effect that Joshua from IIN talks about, that I, you know, I pass this on to whoever I'm serving that day, whatever client, or even just my boyfriend. You know, if I'm not, you know, nourishing my body and addressing that, I'm going to be cranky. I'm going to yell at my boyfriend. I become Hurricane Annie. And if you're listening, Isaac, I love you. And I am sincerely sorry for any time I've, you know, shout out. So it's,
if you get upset with him, does he go, did you not have a whole food today?
I don't know. I don't think he's ever said those words, but
something along the lines.
But I mean, you know, in the past, it's been honestly, before I started really being mindful about my food, and part of my journey has included, you know, professional help, as well as, you know, being a member of Overeaters Anonymous 12-step, because through that program, it was in which I, you know, found my spirituality, which is a huge form of primary food, and not necessarily religion, but what I consider as unity consciousness. And for me, my initial, you know, thoughts about my higher power were like being part of a choir. Hmm. 100 voices singing in harmony together is way more powerful than just my own single voice. Yet we're all singing together. We're all conversing together in harmony. The other, you know, vision I had was I went whitewater rafting with my friends once, and I got thrown out of the raft.
You got thrown out of
the raft. Like we hit a rock and I fell out and I got caught under the raft downstream. So like, you know, I'm backwards and the rafts are, you know, the rapids are coming up and I need to get out. And they tell you never to stand up. It's my own willpower, right? Because if you put your foot down, you'll get caught in the rocks and you could twist your ankle, because tons and tons of water and gravity, right, is way more powerful than me. So I had to surrender and let my friends lift me from under my, you know, armpits. That was the only way I was getting to the raft. Because if I tried to lift myself up, not happening with tons and tons of water coming downstream on top of you with gravity. And to surrender, which does not mean giving up, means taking the next right action, right? And in the beginning, when I was 220, whatever, 40 pounds, it was just, you know, one step at a time, one meal at a time, one movement at a time. It was just to surrender meant taking that little step and giving the results up to God. So when I focused on that program, I lost the weight. My body followed suit. But when I focused on like changing my body, my serenity, the program just went totally out the window. So it was all about surrender and just really taking a mind, body, spirit approach, not just only medication or only whatever.
So someone who's listening, I'm sure there's someone listening who's like, wow, this sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that lost feeling, the going at 3 a.m. in a snowstorm, craving feeling sounds
and
so familiar.
Diets that don't work. I did every single diet, had every exercise equipment in my house.
How do we start to teach people who don't know the basics of what's a whole food and what's not a whole food? Let's talk about that because you know, there are things like juices.
Well, is it a freshly squeezed juice, like, or made
exactly.
from, you know?
But most people will, like, you know, go into a store and see a fruit juice.
Right.
Without reading the label.
That
it's like 6% juice and everything else percent sugar and water and
right.
stuff. I didn't know when I was kind of blind to all of this that there was a difference, that like a strawberry juice or even an orange juice from concentrate and stuff wasn't the right kind of food for my body, even though I felt like crap.
Yeah.
I thought I was doing the right thing because I didn't know. So what are whole foods and what are not whole foods? You know, like fruit flavored things are not fruit.
Right. Well, it's really tracing what we're, you know, talking about, food from the source, right?
Right.
Was it picked right from the ground, and has anything else been done to it? Was it adulterated? Was it heated? Did it go through a grinding mill? What level of processing and adulteration is, you know, the thing that's sitting, the baked good, the Twinkie, the ho-ho, whatever it is, probably could last for another how many years because there's all of these chemicals, preservatives. But that definitely didn't come from a ho-ho tree, right? The apple, you know, that has, you know, we just picked it off. And
right.
that's nature's food. And it's crazy, those juices, they have enough sugar in that one juice, maybe for a day's worth for anyone. And without any of the healthy fiber that helps to lower the glycemic index or any of the other vitamins or nutrients, that made a huge difference. I know I was addicted to fast food because when I totally started detoxing, I actually went on a quote unquote juice reboot, which wasn't for very long. That changed my life. And you're the one, do you remember?
Yeah, I remember.
Introducing me to my first juicing experience.
I remember.
But it was the first time I actually had like real nutrient. I didn't have any craving. Well, I definitely had detox symptoms, like my skin, you know, broke out for a little bit. But after I got over them, after the first 2 days, I never felt like I had so much energy. And do you remember what I looked like?
I remember.
The juicing glow.
I remember.
It allowed me, you know, I started adopting normally, like, to eat more of a plant-based whole foods diet. And I had so much energy and confidence. And that's what I love working with clients. It's not about the 5 pounds. It's about confidence, energy. Okay, I'm ready to do what I'm meant to do in the world. Like those higher goals, not just, okay, I just want to lose, I don't know, a love handle or something, you
right,
know?
Right. Because you wanted to feel better.
Oh my God. It was just like night and day. I wanted to share it with everyone.
And in what time frame did you start to feel better?
With the same week.
I mean,
it was hard at first because, again, there's always a learning curve to getting used to doing something new and a lifestyle change. That's why it's so important to go slow and small steps. And the reboot was only 3 days. And it wasn't even total juice. I had like a vegan dinner, very small dinner. But when I, you know, did the ramp down, like my body couldn't even handle a burger at that point. Like it didn't want to, like the protein, it was too much. I just like, it's intuitively, my body will always remember the reaction to refined sugar. So I actually avoid all refined sugars now. But
do you have cravings for it or?
No, once it's out. But here's the thing. If I don't do the inner work, the emotional and the spiritual work, I will totally go back to the food because that was my best solution to dealing with life. Right. I'm in terms of like not, you know, foods that are problematic for me or addictive. Like once that cookie's in my body, it's like I want more, more, more. That's what sets off that craving.
And why is that? Because then it numbs you?
It numbs me. You know, for me personally, it was, I tend to be an overworker, overachiever. So when I came home, the only thing I wanted to do was just veg out, get in my, you know, get in my crappy, you know, sweats, burrito myself up in a blanket. With a burrito and like chocolates and all of that stuff. Not that these things, like sugar is not bad. It's just very, very powerful psychotropic substance, just like alcohol or tobacco or any, you know, it's not the enemy, but I know for me personally what it does in my body, like an alcohol will to an alcoholic. And that's why I'm just, you know,
I think it starts there with the awareness of admitting and being honest with yourself. What does sugar do to me? What does eating salt do to me? How do I feel? Like, come on, when you eat a lot of salt, you know, your like heart races and you know, you feel it, but people don't like want to talk about it.
Yeah.
That's destructive.
And it was hard because, you know, so much of my social life before was around eating and go, you know, doing the whole New York City life thing. Let's go to this restaurant, that restaurant. And I don't feel restricted today at all. And
so let's talk about the social part, because that's a great point. What do you do now in restaurants?
You know, and let me tell you something. Today I'm a vegan and I'm gluten free. You know what's funny? Eating fast food, I didn't even realize that I had a gluten sensitivity until I did a, you know, mini cleanse. And then I realized that every time I put wheat in my body, it would itch. And I was so numbed out by tons and tons of sugar before that.
A lot of people don't realize that. Describe your gluten sensitivity. Itchiness?
Just total
fogginess.
Fogginess, like brain fog, but that was also due to like the sugar fog as well. But uncontrollable itchiness. I didn't have any hives. I was like ants in my pants for hours. I wouldn't be able to go to sleep. It was so frustrating. I'm so happy to not eat gluten today, not because it's a fad, but the way it makes me feel.
Right.
So, and a lot of scientific evidence. I could totally nerd out and talk to you about zonulin and leaky gut and gap junctions, but that's for another time.
That's the next episode.
Yeah. But today I, you know, I wouldn't give it up for the world because I feel so good. It, you know, in terms of like yoga, right? It's not necessarily thousands of years ago. It wasn't for, okay, I'm going to get fit and buff, right? It was about, you know, getting yourself physically ready to receive God or a higher, some spiritual force, right? It was a spiritual practice. And that's what I feel like making most of my food. So going out, I eat out with my friends all the time. But I call the restaurant ahead of time and I say, you know, I ask them if they can accommodate me. Most of the time they can. Sometimes they can't. So I'll bring my own backup food. And I'm very honest with the, you know, manager. Listen, I have got food allergies. And some, you know, is it okay? I'll still buy something. You know, we're here. We love your restaurant. That sort of thing. And it always works out. Hmm. Always, always, always. Because for me, I just know if anything like that enters, it's just a disservice to myself. I have that much self-respect now. It's not restrictive at all. It does not feel restrictive. It was like the key to freedom for me. But I did try to do this in the past without like the support of, you know, the psychological support and the spiritual support for me personally doing, say, the 12 steps or any other thing in my spiritual journey, the artist's way, my morning practices and AM adventures are so huge. And that's like the first thing I do with my clients. Without that, it was never sustainable, you know, eating quote unquote as clean as I do today or with Whole Foods, because I didn't have the self-respect, you know.
That's huge.
And, I was asking my boyfriend, have I changed in the past 2-3 years? And he was like, yeah, it's like total 180. So the way I am eating refined non-whole foods is not a pretty picture. It totally, it starts there. It's not the end of the journey, but it's the beginning, right? It's only a beginning.
Well, we're going to talk about how you healed yourself with Whole Foods. We'll take a little break and then we'll get on to that.
Hello out there. It's Steve Jenkins. I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
We're back with Annalisa Vicencio, music therapist, holistic health coach. We're talking about recovery and eating psychology and whole foods. So we're going to talk a little bit more about your whole food choices, how it healed you, life events, your creativity as a piece of your wholeness, and, you know, more of the realization of you know, you kind of have to be like self-accountable when things come to that changing point. Like for me, it was, I also remember a realization, learning that, well, let's take the image or the concept of a malnourished person. In my head, I was always like a thin person, but I realized that my heaviest weight, I was malnourished.
Yeah. Oh, me too.
I was like, oh my goodness, wait, malnourished people can be heavy and have been eating a lot.
Yes.
But what was I eating? Garbage.
Garbage. Exactly.
Pretty much garbage.
Garbage that got stuck in my fat cells and just, got, accumulated. That was totally my story.
How did you recover and heal yourself with whole foods?
Well, I realized that there was more than just the standard Western medicine modalities. And I started to explore and try to... Actually, I wasn't even diagnosed with PCOS until I became my own advocate. And asking my GYN to do specific tests, and they were like, they confirmed it. But when I realized what the underpinning of polycystic ovarian syndrome was, which was insulin resistance, which is the same underpinning of type 2 diabetes, I realized that there were more options. So I started reaching out to naturopaths and always integrating them. It's not like I said F you to my allopathic doctors.
No. You walked in the office.
I was very honest. And I, you know, for those practitioners who weren't comfortable, I left them because this was my body. And, you know, I found a psychiatrist who was totally willing to get, you know, slowed, you know, not have me on like 5 psychotropic medications. And because that, I mean, some of those medications totally exacerbated the binging. Because they do have, I mean, and it was...
As a side
effect. And it's well documented. I mean, this is a serious public health crisis for people with serious and persistent mental illness. We're dying 25 years earlier, not from mental illness, but from chronic lifestyle-related diseases like diabetes, metabolic syndrome, heart attacks. It's a serious issue. So for me, part of the wake-up call was my father actually died from the... That kind of, you know, he had a major heart attack after years and years and years of not taking care of himself, uncontrolled diabetes, and not getting, you know, taking care of his heart health. Had high blood pressure, the whole thing, and I was determined not to follow in his footsteps, which is when the bulimia was very active, and I actually started to once I became diabetic and was over 200 pounds and not living life. And to heal... besides, you know, exploring herbs more now, you know, stress reduction was huge, huge. The impact that stress has on my hormones, on progesterone receptors, on cortisol, the stress hormone, is like night and day. So just even taking 5 minutes in the morning and night to do deep breathing exercises, simple ones, or alternate nostril. You can always contact me. I'm sure we'll share all of that in a minute, but made a huge difference. That was the start.
That's your primary food right there.
Oh my gosh. And music. So I was always a pianist, and my mom's a fantastic pianist, and I would play like up to 6 hours a day when I was a teen. But it was like this hidden, closeted thing no one never knew in high school. And to grieve my father's death, I started playing music. There was no other way. Like, in order for me to be present, I really believe that music is a need. It's like vitamin M. It was like me being malnourished, you know, even though I was eating tons and tons of calories. There was no nutrients in there. It was just empty calories. And it was the same thing without music. And for the first time, I started using my voice. Someone told me when I was younger that I couldn't sing. And so, you know, I aligned myself with that, unfortunately, and shut myself up, my voice. And then in 2011, it was like the first time I started singing with the Jazz Ensemble. I just wanted to, you know, shred on the keys and like get some practice with that. And
I started opening.
It was so eye-opening, so healing. And then I went to this symposium on music in the brain at SUNY Purchase because one of my favorite neuroscientists was presenting, and I found the field of music therapy. And at that time, I was very dissatisfied. I couldn't make a living, you know. I mean, those primary foods, of course, that was a stressor that would cause me to, you know, want to eat ice cream at night. Again, not that ice cream is bad, just for me, doesn't really do well. And I had known about drama therapy before. I was very passionate about that. And I literally started crying, Cynthia. I was watching an autistic child who didn't interact with anyone in the world finally start to interact through music. Nonverbal autistic child crying in the tonal key of whatever they were improvising. And at that point, that was the aha. I was like, I was called on this earth. You know, Frederick Buchner, he has this saying that our vocation is the crossroads where the world's greatest need and our greatest gift intersects. And, you know, and I was
always... My new tattoo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so good. Hey, that was my NYU thesis opener. And from there, it was just, you know, I was already working as a social work assistant and working at a special needs school as an educator. And I knew that was my calling. And ever since, and that's about the time I met you, actually. Yeah. Do you remember when I was writing
the thesis.
NYU admissions?
The thesis that would never die.
it finally ended.
It finally died. Finally ended. Completion was huge.
And that's the key. It was really connecting with my calling in the world. So it's not only just a job. It was, you know, my calling. My body followed suit. There's a saying in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm going to butcher it. I apologize. But it goes along, you know, when the spiritual malady is addressed, the mental and, you know, the physical work itself out. And it's so, so true. Because it's just like when you're improvising, you're just in it. You're not thinking, like I'm truly surrendered to the music, I'm not thinking, oh, did I do it? Am I in the right scale? Is this, you know, that kind of thing. It's, you're just in it. It's like, you know.
I feel just like that when I'm cooking.
Ah,
I just surrender to like what I feel like based on my sight and smell, what I think is going to turn out great. And it does. It really does. I love that you're talking about this because Annalisa is a woman who has healed herself of type 2 diabetes.
It's totally, you can't, my A1C is completely normal.
I mean, people say it's not possible, and it is so possible.
Very possible.
And then she's healed herself through music also.
Oh my gosh, yes. And I will say, when I started the Juice Reboot, which really helped clear me to be aware of things like gluten intolerance and other things that I was totally poisoning myself with that I had no idea because I was numbed out. Because when I numb with the food, I not only numb out the bad or the hard feelings, I numb out the good as well. Everything.
Yes,
everything gets numbed
out. Everything.
But I was on a retreat for imagery guided music. It's a special technique in music therapy. And I was learning the Bonnie method for those of you music therapists who know, level one. I had images, very vivid images of my resentment around not honoring my musicality when I was younger. And that's what started it. It was kind of like, all right, this is unfinished business that is totally causing me, you know, it's fueling this urge to eat non-whole foods, processed foods, things that don't really serve me. It's not an efficient use of energy. And it's just clogging my body. And, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, if it's the fat that's really hungry. When we're not nourished, the cravings are there because we're not nourished. But my God, when I actually started eating, and I love kale. Oh my God. I thought, I was like, this is such crap. I'm like, you know, my first time thinking of a kale salad. When we are fulfilled, the food doesn't call. I'm totally neutral with it. It yeah. just is. And it's, I'm so grateful for it. It's,
You made a humongously awesome point that your creativity can be blocked by what you're, by the poor quality of food that you're eating, basically.
Yes, without a doubt. And I mean, food is medicine. There's a double-edged sword. Food.
Wait a second. Let's back up. And anyone who's experiencing creative block, let's look at what you're eating.
Mm.
Are you eating things that's fogging you up?
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing that on purpose even?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Know,
and even
fear.
Even relationships, other forms of primary food, not necessarily the food on your plate. Are you eating up? Are you consuming relationships that are toxic to you? Are you working in an environment that was toxic? I felt my soul was dying when I was not in a fulfilling career before I was a music therapist. That will definitely drive me to eating non-whole foods because I wasn't whole.
Exactly. Now that you are more whole, and you have a company called Whole Music, it is, right?
That's actually my boyfriend's company, which is amazing because he has like the same philosophy.
His,
you know, you can check him out, Whole Music LLC. Just Google it. But my company is called Whole Health Power because I'm all about mind, body, and spirit. The connection between primary and secondary foods is powerful. And I believe that I empower the client. The change comes from the client. And I'm not fixing anybody. I don't fix. The more I fix, the worse it is. But when I'm just an accountability partner. I'm like a professional friend holding their hand. It's not therapy. There's a difference. Therapy is treatment. Coaching is not. And I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not prescribing a food plan. But we work on everything from making green smoothies to, you know, walking together to, you know, I use music in my practice all the time to help, you know, with the relaxation response. Huge, huge. How are we managing our stress? I mean, it's huge.
Creative people out there, seriously, look at what you're eating. I think we need to hear and honor what your whole healed music sounds like. Well, there happens to be a keyboard right in front of Annalisa. I don't know where it came from. It just materialized right now. I'd love for you to dive in.
All right. All right. Let's see. Let's take off the ring. And can you guys hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Difference a day made, 24 little hours brought the sun and the flowers where there used to be. Difference whole foods made. There's a rainbow before me. Stars above can't be stormy. Since that moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, it's heaven. Menu, whole health.
health power, yeah. Oh, what a difference a day makes. And the difference is you.
Oh, I can't imagine what that sounded like before you started eating better. Where can people reach out to you and find you online? Because after that proof right there, I mean, that's the end of our show. That was the best way to end it.
Oh, thank you for this opportunity. So you guys can, the best way to contact me is actually through Facebook. So facebook.com/WholeHealthPower. You could just Google me, Whole, W-H-O-L-E, Health, H-E-A-L-T-H, and Power, P-O-W-E-R. And you can also email me at Annie@WholeHealthPower.com. Those are the two best ways to get in touch with me. And I'm happy, if you're struggling, you don't need to. I mean, I'll have a conversation with you, you know, we'll just put in the books. We can have a conversation, see if I can, help you. If not, I can always pass on some free tips. They can sign up for my newsletter. Just contact me through Facebook. That is the best way right now.
That was amazing. What a difference Whole Foods makes. What a difference Primary Food makes. You have been listening to Primary Food on Heritage Radio Network. Please come back for more.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.